It's time to talk Padres baseball.
This place is electric.
Our 97.3 The Fan staff is together to break down everything both on and off the field with the San Diego Padres in our commercial-free Epic Padres Roundtable, sponsored by Epic Wings. Buckle up, Prior faithful. We've got a lot to discuss. Now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Getting down to the nitty-gritty, just 34 games left in the regular season. The Padres clinging to the final playoff spot in the National League after a 3-3 road trip to Cleveland and New York. Welcome in to our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable, commercial-free here on 97.3 The Fan. And I am glad to say we got the core five here today. Braden Zapprenant at the end. Stephen Woods, good morning again. Tony Gwynn Jr. back from New York City.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Welcome back from the Big Apple, and Chris Elda to my left.
I want to thank Tony. He sent out our fantasy football draft order, so I'm doing a mock draft during the show. You don't mind?
That's fine. We'll have a
mock draft during our show.
So wait, it's my pick. Hang on here.
We'll have a roundtable draft coming up in a little bit, but I wanted to start you guys talking about something positive, the resurgence of Fernando Tatis Jr. It's been going on for quite a while now this season, but what's working for him, and is this the Fernando that we now expect to see going forward consistently in his career? And if it's not, why not? And why haven't we seen this maybe as consistently, Woods, in the last couple of years from Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Well, I think you know better than ask this question because there is absolutely no way to tell. Would it surprise me next year if he hits 45 home runs? No. Would another year, another start like this surprise me? Maybe a little bit. But we've always known that player was in there. Now, he's not going to hit 40 home runs. Maybe those days are gone, and that's okay because of the true the player that can change the outcome of a game in many different ways. He threw a guy out yesterday. He robbed a grand slam. He hit two home runs. I mean, he really is a complete player. He's really, really an excellent player, and we always knew it was in there. So it's not going to surprise me anything he does. Everything he does is a surprise sometimes.
Yeah, you say, well, maybe he's not that 40 home run player we saw earlier, but Tony, I mean, if he's on the pace in the second half to be a 40 home run player, had he not gotten off to a slow start, he certainly is showing us that power in spades right now.
I think that's part of the reason how we got there in the first place in terms of this 40 homer thing. Yeah, I'll take you guys back to, was the 2020 season. Everybody was trying to extrapolate that 2020 season into 40 home runs, right? And then he did it once. But I think this is who Tati actually is as a player. I think he's right in this, 20 to 27 range in terms of homers. But it's, as I would say, it's his ability to affect the game in its entirety, defensively, on the base pass. And, if you take away the homer, the lack of homer early. I mean, he's really been swinging the bat like a hitter, probably going back to the end of May, right? The homers weren't there, but he started to get his stroke around that time. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him, get off to a slow start, because I think a lot of guys do that. But I think this is the Tati. This is the real Tati right here that we're seeing on a consistent basis.
And Braden, it's a phenomenal player. Maybe even someone who will be in MVP conversations going forward. When he started, I think we just all assumed, oh, this guy's going to rack up two or three MVP awards before the end. That may not be the case anymore, but I mean, this is a complete baseball player.
Yeah, absolutely, from top to bottom. And that's why, it's great to have him start the game off in the leadoff spot and set the tone. It's great to see him. He contributes in multiple ways. I mean, yeah, sure, he's got his flaws. I mean, sometimes he's a little extra aggressive on the base pass. And, we talked about the slow start, but, you're seeing why the Padres believe that he needed to be part of their organization for his entire career, and why they gave him the contract that they gave him, because they knew this is the player that they had regardless of struggles. And this is such a hard game to play that even the best are going to struggle at times. I mean, there are other guys throughout Major League Baseball that get hyped up a lot in when they have really good years, and then they have a down year. I think of Vlad Guerrero Jr. He doesn't have too many home runs this season. It's a lot of up and down. And
Cal Raleigh,
who had a great year last year and can't really find it this year. You're going to have some down portions of seasons. He's not going to be perfect all the time, but this is the type of player that when he's at the hit the best, and when he's playing at his best, he could carry this organization, this franchise. I think he's done it here in the second half.
Chris, is this the real Fernando Tatis Jr. in your mind, the one that you expect to see more often than not?
Yeah, I expect at least two home runs and robbing a grand slam almost every night. And when he doesn't get there, I'm disappointed. I just think the surprising Fernando, now that we're here, really truly was what we saw for the first 2.5 months of the season. It just blew my mind that a guy with his numbers and career, just had not been able to get the ball, hit it out of the ballpark. And I remember an afternoon game here where he hit a deep fly ball. I think I got caught on the warning track, and he reached the end in terms of exasperation. You could see him on the bench, and it was finally, I thought, getting to him, because even he couldn't believe that was happening. ESPN rated their top 50 baseball players just the other day. Fernando was number 47 on that list. He is clearly better than that, but that is how surprisingly below the level I think he was playing for a long time for them to even consider him that low, because he's certainly better than that.
Yeah, that list came out 1 week too early, and someone's feeling really silly right now, like, ooh, we ranked him too low. I always think with Fernando, pitch selection seems so part of his game when he's going well, and when he's seeing it well, you can just, he's so dangerous every time up there.
Insert that into every player that you mentioned, right? Like Jackson is I heard you guys on the broadcast yesterday, Tony in particular, talking about the pitch selection from Jackson Merrill. It's the, and Manny too, like all the big dogs, they got to swing at the right pitches to get to accomplish what they want to accomplish. It's standard.
The game is too hard.
Like, so hard.
And with these velocities and the spin, if you are, swinging outside of the zone, and listen, I get it, it's easier said than done, but you're done. You're toast.
One of my favorite Tony-isms is chocolate mousse. Looks so good, so bad for you on that high heater that they all seem to swing at from time to time. But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword, because we heard from Jackson as well. If you're trying too hard to command the zone and lay off the close pitches, you can lose some of that aggression and some of your swing. And, Tony, I think we saw that with Jackson. Last couple of days haven't been great, but he was so hot. And he wasn't necessarily laying off everything out of the zone. He was just feeling it and hitting some of those pitches that were up that he was missing earlier in the year.
Yeah, but it started with him hacking at pitches in the zone. And then he got into a groove, and then it became a little bit easier to get to the pitches that were pitchers' pitches. I just think that for Jackson, it really has been that simple. Now, in yesterday's game, he got some pitches in the middle of the plate, and he was just off. That's going to happen from time to time. But I think for the most part, when he is in the zone, good things happen. It doesn't mean he's going to get a hit every time, but it gives himself a better chance to be as hot as he was. And I just think, it can go for everybody, as Wood said, but especially for Jackson. When he, the first, I don't know, two games of that series against the Mets, I don't know that they threw him very many strikes. And they had some ton of success. Now that part starts to trickle into your head as a hitter, and now you're a little cautious. And so he just has to kind of the off day came at honestly a perfect time for him, kind of reset, come home and get some home.
It's kind of like golf, Woodsy. Like you can shoot 78 or something, 88, whatever's a great score for you.
Yeah.
And then the next day on the third hole, hit one shot and spray it. And now, for the next month, you can't figure it out.
That's all you're thinking about.
And you've been great for a long time.
Certainly. And that's did you ever see when you were playing, or, everyone had the book on your dad? Just throw him a fastball, let him take his single and maybe a double, and we'll move on to the next guy, try to get him. I'm not going to waste 15 pitches on Tony Gwynn because he's going to get me. Like, the book on Jackson Merrill, what do you think it says right now? Just don't throw him a strike?
Don't throw him a strike.
Yeah.
Get it out of the zone. See if he's going to be disciplined to take his walk or to just not swing in those particular counts until you make a mistake. And why? He's too dangerous not to try that at this point.
Right.
You can't just make pitches in the zone to Jackson and think that it's going to be all good, because as we saw for the previous, 2-3 weeks,
it was unbelievable.
It was not good for opposing pitchers.
No.
Now, the book on Tatis always seemed to be bust him inside. a lot of teams obviously pitched him in. Have you seen anything different lately, Tony, there?
You know, one of the things I've seen there is, you know, aside from Toddy cleaning up whatever he needed to clean up mechanically, he's not giving the ground that he used to do. Like, they used to throw that ball in, unless, and I'm talking about ones that weren't necessarily the ones where he actually has to kind of do the matrix and get out of the way of the ball, right? There's a mentality as a hitter that you can't concede too much ground in here. Because once they get you moving this way, now it just opens up everything away. And what I've seen from Toddy is there's less of that movement. And it's almost like, this is my territory, I'm commanding it. And what we've seen also is these long at-bats. Like, he can be 1-2, lays off the slider away. All of a sudden, it's getting tight for that pitcher up there, and they've made mistakes, and he's made them pay. And I think that's the kind of evolution I think we've seen from Toddy this year. Forget the home run part, but when he gets behind, he's making these pitchers have to earn their out. And I think that's the way it's got to be for him.
It's our Epic Padres Roundtable, sponsored by Epic Wings. Always fresh, never frozen. And I am very jealous of Tony, because you were in the building for that catch on Tuesday. And, I mean, that's one that's going to live forever. We're going to see that on highlight reels at Petco Park for years and years and years. Take us through kind of your just perspective from the booth at Citi Field. And we certainly heard the call with you and Jesse, which was
phenomenal.
We're
going to hear his reaction on the Gwynn and Chris show for years and years as well.
Oh, we played it too. It was awesome.
I just want you to know.
That was very
much. That's going to live on also, Ben.
That was very much like being at the house with your buddies, watching the game and like talking it through in real life. That's what happened on the broadcast. But I've been blessed with like good eyes. And so although New York is not the greatest booth because we're kind of tucked underneath the overhang and that corner can get blind, I did see him go up and like you could see his glove. You see the ball go in his glove. And at that point, the only thing that threw me off, because when he landed, his hat, I thought he spiked his hat in disappointment. So although I know my eyes saw the ball go in the glove, him spiking his hat was like, did it fall out? And then after like a split second, I realized, oh, he's just like, he's living in the moment right now. He caught that ball. It was awesome. I thought the play at Petco Park was ridiculous. This one was way better.
Plus, we had just seen the one for Jackson where the ball did go in his glove.
Yeah.
And it came out of his glove before he got it over the fence again. So you can never be 100% sure until you see that baseball.
I mean, the best part was the New York crowd. They saw it, I think, better than everybody. Because it was just, you could just feel the energy get sucked out of the stadium when he came down. And then he spun the ball up in the air.
Unbelievable.
Amazing
stuff. This is great.
All right, so Craig Stammen has been pretty consistent all year long, saying he wants the Padres to keep being aggressive. All right, I'm fine with that, despite what happened on Monday in New York. So, guys, Braden, I'll start with you. How aggressive do you think the Padres should want to be on the base paths? And where do we draw the line between aggressiveness and recklessness on the base paths?
You know, doing the work with USD Baseball, they got a philosophy of if we're going to fail, we're going to fail aggressively. And to me, if you're going to have that philosophy, which it sounds like the Padres do, you're going to be aggressive. And those are going to be the days that it doesn't work, because sometimes it doesn't work. But, you know, you can't change who you are because you're not getting a couple of results that you're getting. You know, I do find, some of the base running for the Padres this season in certain situations have been close to reckless. But, you know, I thought in terms of the three sends, the only one that didn't make sense was only on the situation, and that's the Jake Cronenworth one, because one, he had to pause to see if the ball landed. Two, you just got four hits in a row off McLean, who looked like he was struggling at that point. Your offense has been hitting well. You know, I think you got to trust your guys to swing right there. That would be the only mistake. The second one, there's two outs. I mean, more than likely, you got to send Manny. I know he's not one of the fastest guys in the world, but, you know, at that point, that's kind of a hang with him. And then the third one, Xander thought he had it, right? Like Xander said in the post game, I thought I had it. I thought I had a good jump. I looked, I thought I could go, I probably should have stayed. But like, if you're teaching your guys to be aggressive, that's what you want out of Xander Bogaerts. You want him to be like, I got this. I'm going to go after it. So, unfortunately, like, you know, the aggressiveness is great. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the other teams, but sometimes it's not going to work out. But what they did was they forced the Mets to make great plays, and the Mets did. And sometimes you got to, you know, tip your cap to the Mets making some pretty remarkable plays on that. So I'm not overly upset with the way that they handled that. If they want to be an aggressive team, I think they played like an aggressive team.
Chris, it's such a double-edged sword because I think making outs on the base paths is the biggest escape hatch sometimes for other teams, and it just deflates the whole game occasionally when you feel like you had all the momentum and you just gave it up on the base paths. But I tend to agree with what Braden said as well. You're going to be aggressive. Overall, that's going to be a much more positive than negative in the long run.
I always think you got to make the other team make plays. I want to just use Xander, though, as an example of what I look at. And what I look at is not whether you're safe or out. What I look at is, was it a good time to take that chance? Xander trying to score with two outs on a base hit was a good time to take that chance. If he stops at third, the odds of the next batter getting him home with two outs are no better than 35 to 40%. I'd rather have him try it. And he was out, but I thought it was a good play. Yesterday, he lined one off the fence in left field. They were losing 2-0 at the time. He stopped for whatever reason when he came around first base. And then, man, I think I'll try it. Well, he would have been out by maybe 10 feet if the throw was on point. He made it. He was safe. But I didn't think that was smart because they were behind, and that was not a time to take a risk. So I think it's aggressiveness is timing as much as anything.
I think that in that particular one, I think it was just a good read. He saw that, I can't remember who was it, Beatty in left?
He was in left.
Beatty, yeah, fielded it, and he was going to stop, and then he fumbled it. And that's when he took off and got the extra base. So I think that one was a good read. As it pertains to the three home plate outs, I think Braden's right. I know he's right because Bob Henley said he was right in terms of that's the one he wanted back, was that first one. He didn't recognize that Jake had to kind of hesitate because he was unsure if it was going to fall, and that kind of killed him from being going home. But I think the other two, the only issue I had with Bogey was that, you know, Bob had his stop sign up. That's the only issue. Ultimately, it was a bang-bang play. I get the judgment call. He probably never even saw Bob because in his mind, before that pitch was thrown, I am scoring on a ground ball anywhere.
We know how Xander is, Tony. He only sees red. Remember what he said last
year. About the Cubs, about the umpire. I do think, though, that the aggressive thing, because I am a big proponent of being aggressive, but I do think you want to preach that early, and as the season gets closer to the end, you got to start trimming off that fat, right? You can't have guys coming in, pinch running, getting picked off. Like that, those are no-nos. You got to be able to read, you know, on a ball down the line. Speaking of late in the games, you hit a ball down the line, and that left fielder gets to it quicker than he should. You got to be able to hit the brakes, get back. You can't get thrown out at second. That could start a rally. So these aggressive things are all necessities, but we're getting, what did you say, 34 games left in the season. You make those mistakes in the playoffs,
toast.
Those will send you home quick.
Stop stealing third with two outs. My God. I mean, we've had so many guys try to steal third with two outs this season. Like,
what was Jace Bowen doing the other? He made it, and I still didn't understand. What are we doing?
That's the one. That's like the one where, you know, you're the skipper, the other players on the team are like, bro, that's the most knucklehead move you can make. And I understood it early in the season. The team was terrible.
Right.
Like, here's the other thing I want to throw out there. I think when we were going into the season, the Padres had a 0.1 chance to win the World Series. Right? Something like that. 1.0. Like 1% or 0.1% chance to win the World Series. It was so minuscule at some point early in the season. House money. Like, be aggressive. Take those sends. Make them make plays. Just don't do dumb stuff. Stealing third with two outs is crazy. And if you go, you better make it.
100%.
You better make it.
We talked about on our show, though, praise for Bob Henley for then sending Jace Bowen the very next day.
Oh, yeah, great
very
send.
Close play.
Yeah, great send.
But you could have been gun shy on that one, and it turned out to be the right send.
I want to defend Bob on something real quick because I've seen it about his non-demonstrative – kind of send homes or stop. The reason why that happens is because a good outfielder is going to get tipped off by a third base coach waving. I'm looking at as I approach the ball. And so the less information you can give out, the better, right? So when you see Bob over here pointing his finger to home plate, he's trying not to tip off the outfielders that are coming in. So I thought that, and then I asked him about it after the Friday game, and he was, that's exactly why.
Never heard of that, never thought of it, now I know it, and I feel smarter for it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Ooh.
These are things you get on our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable. Grab your wingman, make it an epic summer with their new Buddy Pack. Limited time Buddy Pack gives you 20 Epic Wings with up to 2 sauce flavors, 4 breadsticks, and 2 medium dipping sauces, house-made ranch and or blue cheese, a $40 value for just $29.95. Let's talk about Ty France. Continues to produce, sitting with an 860 OPS. So, Chris, should AJ Preller be trying to lock up Ty France to a multi-year deal? And if so, what's a reasonable price range to keep Ty France?
That is not, you know, my area of expertise. I let them worry about what he's worth. I do think that Ty France is a guy I would love to keep. I've always been a fan, but he's given us so much more than I could have ever expected. The only thing, and I hate to say anything even questioning a fellow Aztec, but to me this is a breakout offensive year for Ty France. To me it's much better than any other season he's ever had. I do worry sometimes when we tend to overpay for one good year, hoping that the rest of them are all going to be this good. But I hate to say something even like that because I've been so happy to watch what Ty's done all year.
Woods, now Ty had some good offensive seasons with Seattle well.
Was he a cleanup hitter though? And I mean, like in the middle of everything, he's become such a huge part of this thing. I always thought he was more of a complimentary addition to an offense.
It's a very hard career to evaluate. The way, you know, got traded a couple of times. Had a slump in Seattle, got traded, then had, I think, traded at the deadline twice in a row, won a World Series ring with the Toronto Blue Jays, but, you know, as a limited contributor. It is very challenging to really identify what kind of player you think Ty France is going to be going forward. What's your thoughts on keeping him around?
He's 31.
31. 32? We have needed a first baseman for a long time. And we thought we had one years ago, signed a guy to a big deal, and ended up didn't really work out. And so I keep hearing every year.
Who is that?
I keep hearing every year I hear, first baseman's so easy to find, left fielder so easy to find. I mean, we got Luis Renjifo and Gavin Sheets out there playing left. We had, you know, you name it, playing first. Yeah, man, it's not my money. Like, it doesn't need to be another break the bank 10-year deal, and I think Ty's comfortable here. I'd actually like to see. I feel so comfortable when he's at the plate. I really do. Like he makes me like. I see him come up, and I'm like, I don't feel that way about Manny right now because Manny's goes, you know, in waves. Ty's just been very solid. Yeah. I'd love to have him here, man. He picks it, you know, and seems to be a really good teammate and fits in to the culture here really, really well. 3-year deal would be great.
Braden, what about you? You usually like the hometown guys, Aztec.
I do. Around. I just think a lot of the evaluation needs to be sometimes you got to say thanks for the memories and then move on in terms of money. So I think this is a loaded question because, one, we don't know how much money the new ownership's going to spend, right? So we don't know, you know, if they have it in the budget. If they're trying to, you know, operate like the Padres have the last couple of years, you know, are you willing to give Ty France over 2 years? You know, to me, I think he'd get a Ryan O'Hearn deal because he's actually been better than Ryan O'Hearn over the course of his career. Ryan is 1 year older than Ty, and they have had very similar career paths. We broke this down on my show, and he got 14 something a year with Pittsburgh. So, and Ty's a way better first. He's a way better defender, right? He actually has better. He's more consistent with his average. You know, O'Hearn I think has 2 more home runs in his career than Ty does. And if O'Hearn got like 14 point whatever it was, you know, I would imagine somebody's willing to pay Ty something close to that. So if you think what Ty is doing is sustainable, and you think he could be a centerpiece, and that's worth $14 to $15 million on your roster, then I say do it. If you don't, I wouldn't be surprised if the Padres move on. But again, I said this and I had somebody call in and be like, I totally disagree. I'd love to have Ty in this team. And I'm like, well, that's not what I said. I would love to have Ty France a part of this team. I just don't know when you start breaking down the finances compared to his age and everything, if it makes sense in terms of what the Padres are trying to do. If they believe that it's worth it on that standpoint, then yeah, by all means, sign Ty France.
How do you get somebody to take a Max Muncy deal? You know, like right. Win a World Series, he makes $10 million a year. I mean, he probably screws over a lot of other third basemen by signing those deals, right? I'm sure Manny and those guys got their big deals. But the guys coming up, like, man, this guy's one of the top performers. He's a postseason hero, and he's like, I'll do it for 10, right? Like, literally, I think he makes $10 million a year, which is crazy to me.
This could be a time for Ty to cash in, too, right?
Interesting comp, though, because Muncy had a couple of really down seasons.
I was about to say, we have, like, this, like, short-term memory loss where, like, yes, Muncy had, like, two bad, maybe three bad seasons.
But he had some monster years. And in the postseason, who's better than that guy? Like,
no doubt. But I'm just saying, in terms of getting paydays, in the postseason is, like, down on the list in terms of why you pay him.
By the way, his contract goes down to $7 million next year. I mean, you know, again, like, we've seen worse third basemen get bigger deals than $10 million a year, though.
I don't know. I think in terms of the question of Ty, I think it's a no-brainer, because I don't think it's going to cost you a ton of money. And, you know, quite frankly, I think that's all of our problems. We start trying to do the salaries.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, do you want him as your first baseman? Can he help you moving forward? I think the answer is yes. I think this year he's like 37 RBIs away. I don't think he's going to reach his career high in RBIs. He's going to probably surpass his career high in homers, but he's doing it in he's had far more at bats in Seattle and been able to prove he can be a guy. I think he had to iron out some swing mechanics that he talked about at the beginning of the season. I think this is the real version of him. So 2-year deal, 3-year deal, I think you can swing that.
Man, I keep looking for these bad years you guys said Muncy had. I mean, 20, 25, 19, 15, 36, 21, 36.
Are we reading homers?
I'm doing homers, right? I'm doing homers. I'm doing homers. But, like,
what about the rest of it? You can't just give us
251, 243, 282, 212. It's a bad year. 188. It's a bad
196.
Year.
196.
249. 251. I mean, we're talking about 19, though. The guy hits 25 homers a year, and you're like, yeah, I'll do it for $10 million bucks.
I think it's a good question.
Padres are playing 35.
I don't know.
Padres are playing 35 million this year.
By the way, it's hard to do Dodger deals because
I know
because
they stay and
the deferrals are at the end. If you put that money right now, he's not making $10 million a year.
It's just an example of don't overpay again for a guy, right? A 32-year-old. Overpay again. But, like, I think he's a valuable
piece. So don't you have to be careful with Ty France?
I think you do.
For one reason. His career OPS is 113 points higher this year than his career.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that, as Tony said, he's figured it out and this is what he's always going to be. And if this is it, then he's your first baseman. But if he's closer to back to his normal levels of his career.
747 for those
747, but this year he's 860. So that's 113 point
monster
difference. That's a huge difference, I think.
You just milk it then. Milk it to the end. And
you know how much I love the guy, Tony. I want to keep him at all costs. But Woods is right. You can't overpay and he's paying too much.
For Tony, he does seem like he wants to be here.
Yeah,
which
I love
is,
it.
You guys don't value nice. That enough, man. Yeah, I think people who want to play here, typically do well here. And I think for Ty in particular, he's having a monster season this year. But, I mean, he had to kind of like play his way into the lineup. It wasn't like he was given the job.
We didn't even think he'd make the team, honestly, when they signed him.
Like,
he's not
looking in.
I didn't think he'd make the team.
I just think you got to value that. And I can't see a scenario in which Ty is going to get overpaid in this
What if some other team offers him a huge deal, though? Do the Padres have to step up to something now they're not comfortable
with? If another team offers him a huge deal, it's probably going to be a done. He's probably going to go to that team. It won't matter.
And I agree with Braden. If we don't know what the payroll is, what the luxury tax or salary cap is going to be, and it comes down to pitching or Ty France, Padres probably need pitching more than Ty France in the future.
Oh, don't worry. You can find a first baseman anywhere.
Yeah, we'll go back to that conversation again. It's our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable, brought to you by Epic Wings. Always fresh, never frozen. And I'm going to take Fernando Tatis Jr. and Shohei Ohtani out of the question for this week's roundtable draft. They're just too easy of answers. But the question is, beyond those two, which player do you think moves the needle the most in Major League Baseball beyond just the numbers they put on the field? Like players that you want to see in promos for the league, like electric players in baseball, and you get to choose one, but it's the draft, so you got to go in order. And I used to use ChatGPT to determine our order. It's one thing that actually I feel like it's good for. So Woods, Tony, Braden, Ben, Chris is the order that it came up with. Woods, you were first up. Outside of Tatis and Ohtani, who obviously brings in a lot of extra eyeballs from Japan, who's a player that moves the needle for you in Major League Baseball?
Oh, man, there's so many. I'm such a huge Bobby Witt Jr. fan. Yeah. He's from my hometown. Complete player. I love Ellie De La Cruz. I love Ellie De La Cruz. I love everything that he does. I love the way he moves. I love the way he hits. I love the way he throws. I know he has his issues. There's not a perfect baseball player out there. I love those two guys. I don't mean to steal two, but I love watching those guys play ball. To watch somebody and you go, wow, I know I could never do that, but I really can't do that. Like, I'm really – that's really out of the realm of my imagination to be able to accomplish what those guys do. The speed, the arm, the power. I mean, it's just – it's beautiful.
Tony, who's a guy that moves the needle for you beyond just the numbers?
Those two are great, and I think if you moved them out of the two places that they are, they would be that. But, I mean, it's got to be PCA right now.
Oh,
I mean, my guy is...
Oh, look at LO.
My guy
he's so good,
is must-watch TV on a nightly basis. He's entertaining. He's good. I mean, he's kind of everything that Mets fans wish they had right now, So, yeah, now I'm going to go with PCA.
Braden?
I know he's been out with injuries a lot. I love watching Ronald Acuña Jr. play. I think I like the swag he has in the box. I like when the Braves lead him off. I think, he brings a different dynamic. I know he's had a lot of comparisons with Fernando, and stuff like that. But I just like the way he plays baseball, like the swag he brings. I think it's kind of fun to watch. And when he's healthy and playing, I mean, the Braves are definitely humming a lot better than they are when he's not there.
All right, so I'm up next, and call me a homer, but
oh boy.
Is there anything more fun than watching a guy throw 104 and come in with a great show at the end of a game with the music and the cell phones and the lights? I mean, I feel like you watch a Padres game and you're a fan of another team, you still kind of get excited when Mason Miller comes into the game.
No question.
I think Mason Miller moves the needle in Major League Baseball with what he does.
Certainly, if you're at a Padre game and the Padres are up by 3 in the 8th inning, you don't want them to score because you want to make sure he comes in the 9th.
You buying a ticket to go watch Mason, though?
It's tough because you don't know if he's going to get in a
game
or not.
That's my point. That's true. That's my point. Like,
but I want to see him. I want to see everything he does. I will watch Twitter videos of Mason Miller. I love watching
pitching
him
ninja,
play.
Yeah,
pitching ninja. If I was a Marlins fan, I'd say, ooh, Mason Miller, what did he do there? Like, I'd be watching him all the time to see what
he's
doing.
That's true. For a closer, it's hard because you don't.
He might not get in.
Might not get to see him, especially Mason. He'll go 5-6 days without pitching.
It was
sometimes
cold-blooded what he did to Bo Bichette the other day.
Yeah, 103 over the head.
And then the slider.
That's all bad. Apologized to him and then threw him a slider. He should have apologized for the slider.
That's exactly.
Incredible.
All right, Chris, you're last up on our roundtable draft.
Yeah, I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but I think it is a part of a larger story and a problem that baseball has. But my answer would have been Paul Skeens. But now, he's supposed to pitch here next week. Are we going to go out of our way to see him? It's the first time he's ever pitched in San Diego. But he's not Paul Skeens right now. And I would say Mizorowski is another one now that you would buy to go see.
Oh, yeah.
But can it last? And that is the big overall question. So since I went last, I felt I could throw out more names. The one I'm paying to see, though, is still Schwarbaum. Kyle Schwarber. I just love to watch him
Chicks
hit him up
into the long ball.
I guess I do too.
All right, let's move on to something fun here. Congratulations to Don, Mud, Jesse, and Tony, named the top booth in Major League Baseball again by Awful Announcing. And Tony, you're definitely part of that crew for sure. Here's the question, though. What, in your opinion, and Chris, I will start with you because you've watched a lot of baseball over the years. What makes for a great baseball broadcast?
Well, first, I mean, I totally agree with the poll. Second year in a row, it is one of my favorite. I love to watch these guys. I want to say one thing, though, because Jenny Kavanagh is a huge friend of mine and ours, and that poll should not list 1 through 30, because I think it's a horrible disservice to somebody who is an inspiration for an entire community of young ladies who aspire to be in that job. Jenny Kavanagh does not deserve to be placed in that spot. I texted her last night. She said she's all right. She didn't pay attention to it. I pay attention to it. I thought that was really rude. I don't want to take away, though, from what these guys accomplished. It's incredible. To me, just inform and entertain.
I agree,
and our booth does it the best of anyone.
Tony, you're part of the list, but what makes the
I'm
good baseball?
I'm just riding coattails, man, honestly.
yeah, Ben knows all about that.
I'm sorry. Well, I didn't let you finish.
What makes for a good baseball broadcast, Tony?
I think kind of a little bit of fun, a little bit of knowledge, and just listening to two people that seem to enjoy one another. When you watch a game, I don't think you notice it most of the time, but when two guys aren't on the same page, I think it pops off the screen a little bit. And so I just think Don and Mud do a terrific job of being able to kind of mend all of those things together. Yeah, man, they're just good spirited people. I think that goes a long way in a broadcast.
Woods?
Yeah, man, don't talk down to me and don't talk bad about the game is the things that drive me the craziest. And Oral Hershiser and John Smoltz, and I listen to those broadcasts. I'm like, I listen to Oral, and I'm like, man, I learned something new, right? But they always talk poorly of the other teams, always. Smoltz, I'm convinced. I loved watching him pitch. I thought it was rad that he went to be a closer, and he was such a great starter. I just fear, like, man, you need to be selling me a little bit. You're actually kind of trying to push me away. So don't talk down to me as a broadcaster, and don't talk badly about the game. It is my two rules for a great broadcast. And I love fun. You know, I love messing around. So
give me an example of talking down to the listener.
More of like.
He modern players, like it was always better when he played.
Yeah,
like,
it was always better. Yeah.
That's why, not necessarily talking to the viewer, but talking not like, down to the players.
And, and rarely do you hear like you didn't play, so you don't know. You don't really hear that in a big league broadcast, but it's what Ben said. It's it's just kind of talking badly about these dudes that are on the field that are, you know, obviously the top 1% of the 1%.
I will say one of the things that I think I know I try to be mindful of is how easy the game gets the further you're away from it. Like watching from up top, and I think this is kind of where fans come in too, right?
Yep.
Like from our viewpoint, you can see everything. Like, why are you trying to go to third?
Right.
Why did you swing at that pitch? Why didn't you challenge that pitch?
Right.
And it's just, I have to be mindful that. Yo, like, do you remember what it was like
when you were,
like,
the speed?
In there? Like, there were times where you were positive that was a ball. You go back and look, you were dead wrong. So, like, I think that's something that all of us who are up there sometimes can lose track of.
Sure.
But it's something that we all have to be mindful of, I think.
Braden, what makes a good baseball broadcast in your mind?
I think being informative, for sure. I think, you know, doing the time to do some homework on the other team is always very important. I thought, you know, I caught the tail end of, you know, Vince Scully when I was in college. He was doing a Dodger-Padre game. And I was in college, and so I didn't get to watch the Padres broadcast. I was watching the Dodgers one. And Vince Scully actually taught me about the Padres more than anything I learned from a Padres broadcast. And that's not to knock the Padres broadcasters, but that's just how informative he was. And then I think so doing a little bit of that on the other team is great because I don't see that team all the time. I see the Padres all the time, right? And then I think you have to have some fun. And I agree with Tony, like, about like the camaraderie there, and the I think you have to have that good relationship. And the last thing I have is be excited to be there. Like, have like there's the fun aspect, but on top of that, be excited to be there. And I think a lot of broadcasters, you know, and I they might forget this sometimes. Not our guys, because our guys are always having fun. But like, I watch other games, they just feel like so miserable to be there.
It's brutal.
And it comes across that they don't like their job, and
they don't
and
like their team
at all. And I learned this in college too. They're like, don't ever complain about being a broadcaster, because there are so many people that would love to do what you do. Like, and it comes to like travel and all this other stuff. Like, when you're on the air, you know, you take the Vince Scully route of that story when he's calling a game on the roof in the pouring rain, and there wasn't one time that he complained about it, because he understood that people would kill to have that job. So the last thing I have on good broadcast, act like you really want to be there, and the team and the crews that love being there, or at least make it sound like they love being there, usually do a really good job, because they're having a blast calling the game.
Can I defend my fellow broadcasters?
You may.
Real quick?
You may.
The one thing I'll say about that, and we've been spoiled for about now 6 years with a good team. When you are watching really bad baseball every day, a lot of my broadcast brethren are actual fans of the game, of that team too. But like, you watch 162 games of the Rockies every day, and Triple S Drew Goodman's heart, because he sounds like he's excited to be there all the time. The human element, you can understand how there could be a game, and you just might be the game you happen to be listening to that day, where they come in and it's affecting them more than it should. So I you know,
it can take its toll.
It can 100% take its toll.
I've called many a seasons like that as well. It's not fun. I totally understand. But that's the hard side of doing our gig, right?
I have a lot of thoughts here, surprisingly. I think what you're saying is correct. That's what the paycheck is for. It's easy to broadcast games in a pennant race when every at-bat feels critical. The stadium's full and everybody's having fun. Test of a real great broadcast booth. Yeah, how do they sound in August when the team's 17 games out? And I think my needle is almost impossible to thread with what I want, and I think you guys do it. You and Jesse certainly do, and Don and Mudd do it as well. I don't want a cookie cutter broadcast.
Right.
But I also don't want to just people who are just completely off in left field doing their own thing. Right. So you've got to kind of be right there between, you know, unique but not the center of attention. The game is still the center of the attention. And I want broadcasters who can anticipate and alert me before something happens. Like, keep your eye on this. Watch this. This is about to be important. And Tony, you do it among the best of anyone.
I appreciate
you. You had me yesterday with the Robert Stockholt not engaging on the rubber, man. I couldn't turn away. Hey. I was like, ooh, here we go.
I wish you guys could have been in the booth for that, because I don't know what the Mets broadcast was doing, but before he was throwing warm-up pitches, and they got the camera right on his foot. And I'm like, yo, he's not nowhere near engaged.
It's like Klug's kid when he pinched against my kid's team. I swear to God, I didn't say anything.
Apparently, the Padres staff were already on it. They had alerted Laz and those guys. And even during the game, I saw Toddy at second base. I saw Souza come out the dugout with the iPad.
I was riveted. I mean, I kept thinking, the way that you guys did, I wanted to compliment you on this. The way I was driving and the way you guys explained it, I kept thinking, Stock is going to throw at Toddy's head because he said something to the umpire. I was waiting for it.
The thing that was killing me was that he was getting the advantage, and it was clearly affecting our hitters from that angle. They just couldn't quite grasp it, and it was just like he could very easily, when no one's on base because the umpires are on the grass, get away with it. But as soon as somebody's on base, make sure he's engaged just enough so that they can't really mess
with him.
So
he was off to the...
He was far third base side.
Okay.
I mean, not even
close to the rubber.
He was like an inch and a half away from that bad boy.
That's crazy. Well, you guys did an amazing job painting that picture. I
want to say thank you for that, because that's something that over time I've gotten more comfortable with. Because I think on radio or TV, you don't want to be wrong, right? But I think you get past that, and I think it's something I've tried to work on.
It's not necessarily predicting what's going to happen. It's baseball. You know what's going to happen. But anticipating the situation that's going to have an impact on whatever is about to happen.
Right. And something to keep your eyes on.
Yeah, you do it really, awesome. Really well.
Thank you.
All right, seventh inning stretch time. We'll have a non-baseball question for everybody today. I'll keep it simple. What's your biggest phobia? And I will start. I'm not afraid of like heights. I don't mind going up in tall buildings, but I am afraid of drops.
So you're no good on roller coasters.
Like the Guardians of the Galaxy ride and the roller coasters with the big drops. Like I can do the kind of the flat one, like Big Thunder Mountain. I'm okay.
Yes.
At Disneyland, but that's the one that goes upside down or anything like that, or even like
we need to catch one of those
Splash Mountain going down at the end. I do not like drops at all. It is not my thing.
No.
That's funny.
I'm gonna agree with Ben on that one for sure. That's Disneyland is about my level of ride. Anything more extreme than that, I am not interested in going on. I agree with the drops, but that's not my phobia. I hate rodents. I absolutely hate rodents. I can't deal with rats. I can't deal with I do not like rodents at all. Snakes don't bother me. Rodents bother me. My mom's like, well, what's gonna happen when you got it down? I'm like,
I'm
calling somebody.
My future wife better learn how to like deal with rats, dude, because I am not dealing with a rat. The rodents get me every
time.
I'm
with you on that one, but that's not mine.
Chris, what's your phobia?
First of you, if you need me at the end of the show, I'll help you down from that's a high perch.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
drop.
I don't want you to. I don't know. This to me is a totally unreasonable phobia, but I guess that's why it qualifies. I heard a story when I was a little kid of somebody, and maybe it was a parent made it up to scare me, but got their foot caught in the drain at the bottom of a swimming pool and couldn't get out. And that has stayed. I won't even go within 100 yards of the drain at the bottom of the pool.
Definitely had a
That is terrifying. That I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. So don't go there. No, don't worry. I'm not going there. Drowning is an extension of that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that just seems like a horrible thing to have happen.
Tony, any phobias?
Yeah, no. Drowning is definitely.
Water?
Ocean water terrifies me. So, you know,
there's a lot of interesting animals in there.
About knee high, and then because I can still control most of that.
As Richard Pryor said, you're pitching a fit in the shallow end.
The ocean water drowning, that's my phobia for sure.
Woods?
Dancing.
Dancing.
Really,
dancing.
For a music man like yourself,
dancing. Oh,
suave, debonair guy there.
I'm so grateful my wife has no interest in dancing or ever. I said to her the other day, we were watching something. And I always laugh at like dudes that dance. I just think it's funny because I can't do it, so I make fun of it. And I looked at her and I go, "Do you realize we've been together for like 12 years? We've never once danced. We haven't slow danced. We haven't danced
like no dancing, not even slow dancing.
Never once.
No, I'm saying in terms of your phobia.
Oh yeah, well I'll slow dance, but like." She doesn't want to, so I'm good dancing. If you guys said like, oh no, you have to dance, I'll sing, I'll play the guitar, whatever. I will not dance, and I don't want to dance. If I go to a wedding, I'm so uncomfortable. Hey, everybody, get on the dance floor. And I'm like,
no, not me.
I'm just pounding like crowning cokes instead because I get panicked about it. So don't ever ask me to dance. That's like my biggest phobia.
All right, last couple minutes, we'll get back to the Padres. Let's look ahead the week ahead for the playoff contenders. Padres back home against the Minnesota Twins and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Of course, the Twins are now hot in the third playoff position in the American League, having just swept the Atlanta Braves. The Phillies will be hosting the Cardinals and then visiting the Seattle Mariners, and the Diamondbacks are home to the Cincinnati Reds and Chicago Cubs. Chris, I think this is an interesting week because a lot of different outcomes could happen, and you could make up ground, you could lose ground. Don't really know what's in store the next 6 days.
Yeah, I mean, if what happened in Milwaukee this week, I think I should tell everybody all we need to know about the game, and we all try to define it as best we could. But I saw the Brewers beat the Mariners 22-0, right? They tied the all-time record, the biggest shutout. Julio Rodriguez threw a ball up into the stands. That had to be the lowest and most embarrassing game in the history, maybe, of the Mariners.
Yes. Rest in
peace.
And
we're talking about a team that was supposed to maybe go to the World Series. The next day, they get up and they get six or something runs in the first inning.
Seven runs in the first two innings.
Right. So, who knows? You give me the schedule of the other teams. I think that's the first thing a good Padre fan should do. They won't, but they should. Is not even think about who those teams are playing.
Right.
Just try to beat the Twins, try to beat the Pirates, and let the rest, fall where it may.
Tony, obviously, every homestand. We said at the beginning of the road trip, I mean, yeah, you want to have a winning road trip, but 3-3 is fine, especially on the East Coast. You need to have winning homestands kind of going forward. And you know, Twins are hot. Pirates are certainly dangerous, but you want to see the Padres have a good week here for sure.
For sure. I mean, 500 the last three road trips. I think they split in Arizona. They split the Miami road trip. They split this one. That's fine, but you got to take care of business like you did last time at home. I think that's just reality. No matter who comes into town, you got to play well here if you're going to be 500 on the road. And, you know, I think the Padres have done that here as of late. The only thing that my antennas are up on is this kind of putting up runs, scoring one. Like, it's not as drastic as it was early in the season when it was like, you know, two hits, one run. But they got to find a way to be a little more consistent scoring runs. I just thought they really smoked off two of those games in New York, right? That first one should have been a win.
I thought they were going to win both of them. Halfway through, I still thought they were going to win these,
without the error in that late inning, got it back in that game. And so I just feel like they kind of gave away two games. And so I'm kind of looking at that. It's three. They went 500, but they very well should have had a much better record coming home.
Braden, your thoughts on the week ahead here for the Padres?
Yeah, they gotta take care of business at home. Like Tony said, I mean, yesterday was frustrating and Monday was frustrating or whatever it was, the two losses that they had, because, you know, those are games that they probably should have won. You know, but then, you know, after you go through the frustrations and start thinking about it from a math perspective again, you're like, all right, well, you're expected to go 500 on the road, gotta take care of business at home. But it only works if they can have a winning homestand against the Twins and the Pirates, which they are more than capable of doing.
Yeah. And Woods, I found out, is kind of mad that they're playing the Minnesota Twins.
I don't know a lot about them. I never watch them.
Play this late in the season.
You want to go back to the old schedule, don't you?
I think I do.
I don't, because the Yankees are coming to town.
Didn't they finish against the White Sox last year?
I mean, someone has to play.
We did it like 2 years in a row.
We've got to do it.
And an interleague series.
And we're doing it next year, too.
Every game.
I just finished with the White Sox.
I don't know. Look, I mean, you know, the Twins are a beatable team. Got some good players. Roger Clemens' kids turned out to be a pretty good player.
Cody.
They've got some good players, man. There's no bad teams right now, really. Like, there's just no bad teams. Anybody can beat you on any given night. So you know how my mentality is. 1-0 tomorrow in the City Connects. 1-0 tomorrow. That's all I care about. I can't worry about the Diamondbacks. I will be watching, but I can't worry about it, man. It's funny because the division, you looked last week, they're so hot, and the Dodgers were scuffling so bad, and the Dodgers were like, cool, we got three against the Rockies, and they're right back to, you know, where they needed to be. So
it's like the schedule like made that happen.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, at a perfect time.
I will say this about the American League. Cleveland was hot when we came in.
That's true.
The American League ain't looked as good as, you know.
They're not very
There are
good.
Only three teams with a positive run differential in the American League right now.
Eight or ten.
The Twins are akin to the Mets at about minus 43.
Well, the Mets just took two or three.
Even though the Mets are in, the Twins are in playoff position right now. But I will say this, the Padres have two of the toughest American League teams still remaining after this series with the Yankees and the Rays.
Yep.
Still on the schedule. So the easier American League teams are starting to disappear from the schedule. But there is still Rockies. There's still Giants coming up. There is an opportunity
for
wins.
Tony brings up a really good point. I don't even know. The Rockies have a winning record against the American League this year.
Yeah.
That's how bad the American League is. So
just even more pressure, though.
Take care of business at home,
baby.
Never mind. They got to win all three against the Twins.
Sweep or die. That's it.
Yeah, and I think the Diamondbacks facing the Reds and the Cubs. These are teams that are still, competing, playing hard.
We're Cubs
seeing
are really
them
good
on a day to day basis. Neither of those teams have given up. And the
Cattell Marte situation may help us a little bit down the road.
Yeah, it seems like it threw them off.
The Cardinals are still very in it, so that's a big series against the Phillies. And the Mariners, I think, are only two out of a playoff spot. As badly as they've played, even losing 22-0, two games out of a playoff spot, the division's still within reach, and traveling from Philly to Seattle is no picnic at this point in the season.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of outcomes that could happen this week. So I do think it's one of the more...
Baseball's a great sport. It would really be a shame if like this were the last season for a while.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because everything's just incredible. Luckily, we don't have to worry about that.
Next week, we'll have a new owner press conference to break down on Monday. Looking forward to that. It'll be broadcast live and commercial free, just like our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable here on 97.3 The Fan. We're going to enjoy some of the wings and the pizza bread and the breadsticks for Braden Suprenant, Stephen Woods, Tony Gwynn Jr., and Chris Ello. I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.